Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
Oh, it's pretty common. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and Finn Man and Robin are here on the mics.
Hello.
So, Robin, on this date, December 15th, this is the day that Gone with the Wind...
Oh, yes.
...premiered. And, folks, do you remember what year this would have been? Of course, we don't believe that you were living at the time, but it's possible you're aware that the Academy Award was awarded to Gone with the Wind in the year...
1939.
That is correct, 1939. Also, another weird thing is that in 1944, this was the day, it was December 15th, that Glenn Miller disappeared. Now, we're talking about Glenn Miller, the band leader, but he was a major in the Army, and he was doing what today we'd call a USO tour, or he was entertaining the troops. So he got in a plane, and he flew from England over to France. America had just liberated Paris, and he was going over to entertain the troops, and the plane disappeared over the English Channel, and they never found the plane, the remains of the plane, anything.
I had no idea.
And they never heard from him again. It was thick fog. And there's different stories about what might have happened. They think he might have got shot down by friendly fire and different things. Mm-hmm. But they don't really know. It's just kind of a weird, weird story. It's also the day in 1925 that Madison Square Garden opened. Now, Madison Square Garden has opened multiple times. This is the third Madison Square Garden that opened.
Haven't you been to rock concerts there?
No, I was never there. Because the fourth Madison Square Garden opened in 1968. Mm-hmm. I was 18 years old, and I had never seen anything at Madison Square. Well, let's sing. I saw something at Madison Square Garden in 1969 or 70. So I saw something right after it opened. I saw
the fourth time.
In the fourth Madison Square Garden, right? Uh-huh. But it was brand new, brand spanking new then, apparently. And, of course, I was always confused by it because Madison Square Garden is located at 34th and 7th Street, and it's round, not square. So the original Madison Square Garden was at Madison Square. The first two were built on Madison Square, and there really was a garden associated with it, but there was a theater kind of a thing. It wasn't huge, but it was fairly big for its time. And Madison Square is on 26th Street Madison Avenue, of course, but it was at 26th and Madison. And then they built the third one, the one that opened on this date in 1925, up on, 50th Street and 8th Avenue, and... That one seated 17,000 people. I mean, that's huge for that time, to have a 17,000-person arena back in 1925. Because even the basketball arenas of today, the hockey basketball arenas that we have around the country, they all seat between 17,000 and 20,000. There's a rare one in Lexington, Kentucky. Rupp Arena seats 24,000 for basketball, and it's because the whole upper deck is benches, like football stadium seating. Mm-hmm. It's not chairs. And so they squeeze people in. I have to tell you, it's a terrible place to see a basketball game or a concert because you're squeezed in, and if the guy next to you happens to be kind of large, you get half a seat. That's just the way it is. Very strange. But anyway, that's it for Madison Square Garden. So... we are in the fourth iteration. It is not at Madison Square. It's not square. So I've always liked to think of it as Madison Round Garden. But that's not really why they called it square. Okay, let's move on to the Obama situation here, because the Bush administration is telling them there's no room for them to move into Blair House 15 days early so their girls can start school. Now, they'll come up with something, but they'll say to them, when they register, they'll say, now, is this a permanent address or a temporary address? And they'll say, temporary. And they'll say, oh, well, we're not sure we can extend you credit. We're not sure we can take your children in because we don't know what school district. You know, I mean, who knows? But
now
I guess.
What school have they decided on? I forgot.
I think Sidwell.
Friends?
Yes. Sidwell Friends.
And where is that?
If it's good enough for Chelsea. No one knows. It's Dick Cheney, that's the place where Dick Cheney stays most of the time when he's in his undisclosed bunker. I'm not sure where Sidwell Friends is, but...
it's in Washington.
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely in Washington. I don't think they want us to know. But what's weird is that they're claiming that it's booked up. Okay? Now...
And how many bedrooms are there?
Well, you know, I'm trying to remember. Blair House...
28?
...has... it has 14 guest bedrooms, uh-huh. 8 staff bedrooms, huh. and get this, 35 bathrooms. Now, if you have 22 bedrooms, why do you need 35 bathrooms?
One for boys and one for girls.
Oh, for each, but I guess. Anyway, it's amazing how big Blair House is, and the idea they can't find a couple of rooms for the Obamas.
I thought it was just one small little building across, you know, you see them right. coming out of there.
Yeah. No idea. And the article that I read on this in the Washington Post over the weekend mm-hmm. talked about how deceptive it is because it looks, the facade looks like, oh, that's a nice little house. It goes back a long ways, apparently. Mm-hmm. So.
I'm recording the, on C-SPAN, the tour of the White House
uh-huh.
tonight. Did you see it last night?
No, I did not. I have toured the White House.
So have I.
Well, I mean, just the three rooms they let you in. But you know what's good about that is that you can go and do the White House garden tour. Now, mm-hmm. after September 11th, they cut it off for a few years. Mm-hmm. But the White House garden tour is cool because you get the regular house tour of the three rooms, the green room, the blue room, whatever it is they take you through. And they start, though, before they do that, they take you outside and you walk around the front of the White House, which only reporters and the president get to do that. Mm-hmm. And they show you all the various trees that different presidents have planted. And there's a picture by each one showing the planting ceremony. So Eisenhower planted this tree in 1955 or something, and Jackie Kennedy and John Kennedy planted this one in 1962. And, mm-hmm. and it's just interesting. And then they walk you through the gardens, the garden where Caroline Kennedy played. And then you come through the Rose Garden, which was really cool. You walk through the Rose Garden, and you walk right past the Oval Office. You can peek in the window and see the Oval Office. Mm-hmm. I have seen the Oval Office from the outside.
Do you think Caroline Kennedy could become president one day? Our first female president? From playing in the garden into the Oval Office?
I don't think so.
Really?
But because I don't think she's that interested in politics. But maybe if Arnold Schwarzenegger married her.
Too late.
It is too late. He's already... Did you know that he came to the United States saying that he wanted to be the biggest movie star in the world mm-hmm. and he wanted to marry a Kennedy?
He did it. I didn't know that.
He did it. Yeah. He set out to marry a Kennedy, and so he said, what's the...
How do I do it?
Well, who's the best-looking babe in the Kennedy clan? And he settled on Maria Shriver, who's not really a Kennedy. But
she's a Shriver. Well,
she's a Shriver.
Enough.
Yeah, she is a Kennedy. Yeah, she's part of the Klan.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's how Arnold did it. And he's never going to be president either. Well, I want to just talk a little bit about the Obama transition. Because one of the things that's going on, Robin, is the adults are back in town.
Isn't that nice?
You know, you folks may remember that when the Bush administration came in, when George W. Bush won, and, won in a squeaker over Al Gore, mm-hmm. the Republicans were fond of saying, oh, this is great, now the adults will be back in charge. And, in fact, we've seen anything but adult behavior. And this isn't a partisan thing. Here's what I mean by we don't see adult behavior. There are levels of intellectual development, and the lowest level of intellectual development is duality. Basic mm-hmm. duality is black and white thinking. There's a right and a wrong to every answer, and you just look to authorities and parents to tell you what it is. And there are no gray areas in a child's life. Well, that's the way this administration has operated. Mm-hmm. Right? George W. Bush is a black and white kind of guy. He doesn't do nuance. Mm-hmm. And he talks in terms of you're either with us or against us. And so he clearly has this very simplistic view of the world. So the adults were not coming into town. The children were coming to town right. in 2000, and the country didn't understand that because the old people were coming along with Bush, Rumsfeld, Cheney, the usual suspects who'd been around quite a bit. So they thought those were adults, but in fact, adults with childlike thinking. Mm-hmm. And so what we're seeing now out of the Obama administration really is adult behavior. He's calm, cool, and collected, which you like to see in an adult. And just as an example, over the last few days, as they've announced various cabinet positions, they've talked about how seriously they're going to take this. For example, Obama chose the head of the New York Housing Authority to oversee HUD, Housing and Urban Development.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Republican administrations tend to put people in these positions who do not believe in the mission of the organization, who will work against the mission of the organization. And
like
you
the EPA and so on.
Yeah. So you mm-hmm. could say, well, that's, you know, they're tearing down unnecessary government structure. The problem is these organizations actually do useful things. And when you don't believe in the mission, you stop having them do useful things. Mm-hmm. And so our government is broken, not because government's bad, mm-hmm. because the Bush administration hasn't really been interested in making it work. And so what we're seeing with Obama is he's putting people in place who are competent. We won't have any more of these, you're doing a heck of a job, Brownie. Uh-huh. Kind of a thing. He was, I think he ran a horsey administration of some sort before he had this. I forgot what his
role
was.
Before he was with FEMA.
I'm sure it was important. It was some kind of a horse association. Yeah.
Hmm.
And
horse's ass. Sorry.
There you are. But also, he has chosen a reputable, not reputable is the wrong word, a bona fide, serious scientist to head the Energy Department.
Mm.
He chose a physicist by the name of Stephen Chu. And Chu is not simply an active scientist with an active interest in research and knows cutting-edge research on energy breakthroughs, really knows the research, knows the literature. He is currently the head of the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory and has been since 2004, so he's got administrative skills as well. And so he's actually putting science back in these scientific organizations. And of course, that's the big knock on the Bush administration, is that they really didn't believe in science. So yeah, I'll just use global warming as a brief example. When they came in, they killed Kyoto and said, you know, more research is needed. We don't believe in this global warming stuff. But in fact, what they argued was, oh, it would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. It would cost too much to enact Kyoto, and we don't believe in it anyway. But in fact, they never put a price tag on it. I always was bothered by the fact nobody pinned him down and said, well, how much will it cost, Mr. President? Because you can get green technologies out of these developments. You can get jobs out of these developments. And overall, investing in environmental change could be a net positive for the economy. It doesn't have to be a drain, but the Republicans painted it as a drain and the media let them get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're hearing a different kind of a thing, that green, you know, can be a job creation kind of a thing.
Now, Friedman in The World is Flat talks about how useful it would be and how it would
be. Yes, yes. Of course, I'm still believing the world's round, so I don't believe a word that comes out of Thomas Friedman's mouth.
You don't.
But no, that's not true. He has some good insights in the book,
mm-hmm.
In that book. And he's got another book out now, The World is Flat, Dumb, and Stupid, I think it is. No, it's
really?
Flat, Hot, and Crowded, I think is the... I think that's the
true.
Name of it. Flat, Hot, and Crowded. So he's carrying it a step further and talking about the world's problems.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have time to solve those problems right now, but we do have time to take a very brief break.
Mouse, the Andy Finn Show will be right back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah!
Ah. Hark, the Herald Tribune sings, advertising wondrous things.
Well, we are in the Christmas season, Robin, and you know, they say it's going to be a tough one. They say it's going to be people aren't going to spend, right? That they've got to have some way to entice people out there into the stores to get them to take out those credit cards and spend.
God rest ye merry merchants. May you make the Yuletide pay.
Can the Yuletide pay? It does pay. Well, that's right. Black Friday is over. They did pretty well, but they're worried that they won't sell enough. So, you know, it used to be the sales didn't start till January and February, right?
Right.
But we're seeing sales now.
Yeah.
Every day, just about.
And actually, they put up Christmas decorations in September and October this year.
Oh, it's gotten ridiculous. I used to keep track, I mean, kind of in my head, about what the earliest Christmas decorations I saw, because you could actually see it was creeping. It was mission creep. Mm-hmm. They would back it up a little bit every day, every year, mm-hmm. a few days. And then one year, you go into these specialty, not just specialty stores, you go into something like Walmart or Sam's Club or Costco, and or a hardware store even, and as soon as they take away their summer stuff, they're not selling lawnmowers and grills, they put out the Christmas stuff. So I saw it in October, then I think I saw it in September.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Christmas, the end of September, Christmas trees were going up, and I thought, there's no point in keeping track in it anymore.
And no wonder Black Friday is not as good as they, because they've been, you know, people have been spending the last 2 months.
Well,
not waiting to spend on Black Friday.
Well, do you know when I bought my Christmas tree?
When?
The day after Christmas last year.
Oh.
Because I'm talking about my artificial.
Are there any needles left
on it? I'm sorry, I should have clarified. I'm talking about my artificial tree.
Oh.
I like having a real tree when I can do it, but it's a fire hazard. There's two things about it. One is that if I'm going to go out of town, you can't really leave lights on. And I can put lights on a timer with an artificial tree and let the tree go on every night for my neighbor's enjoyment, even when I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't do that with a real tree because it could go up like that. But the other thing
find
is...
Find your tree.
Where?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the North 40. No, I think I bought it. I might have bought it at Walmart, I have to tell you.
They're doing well.
Well, they are. Driving every little mom and pop out of business, but
right.
Can't beat those prices.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I have two cats.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really don't want cats climbing up into a real tree. There's pine sap.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come down, and their fur's got pine sap in it.
Ugh,
and it's not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pretty.
No.
So the artificial tree, they do. Well, I got one that will climb up in the artificial tree.
How do you avoid that?
I spank it.
The tree?
No. The cat.
The cat.
No, I don't spank the cat. Don't be writing to the ASPCARB, folks, because I don't spank the cat. But, boy, I'm tempted. If they go up it, they go up it. Just hope they can find their way down. And they don't hang themselves on the light strings. In any case, that will do it for cats and trees. But let's move on to... Let's see. Do we really want to talk about Blagojevich? I guess only to say this. One of the interesting things is I saw a picture in the Washington Post. I'm sorry. I should give some context. For those of you who may have been underneath a rock for the last 6 days, the governor of Illinois has been caught trying to sell the Senate seat of Barack Obama that he gets to appoint someone. And they think it was Jesse...
Jackson
Jr.'s people who said, we can help you raise $1 million, $1.5 million if you give them the seat. But that's not proven yet. And, of course, Jesse Jackson Jr. is innocent until proven not innocent. But Blagojevich, he's guilty. I think we're pretty clear about that. He's been indicted.
We've got tapes.
We've got tapes. And you know how tapes are.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty incriminating. But what's interesting is that there's a picture in the Washington Post, a little article over the weekend about how Obama's been distancing himself from Blagojevich for some time because he knew he was trouble. Of course, he's been under investigation for a while, but he started distancing himself when he first got in the Senate.
Yeah.
And there is this picture of the two of them together back in 2005 in the Washington Post. And I looked at it and I thought, you know, back then, here's the governor and the senator. People probably thought they both had bright futures. And here we are just 3 years later, and Obama's president, he's at the top of the political heap in the world. There's no bigger job than president of the United States. Well, maybe commissioner of the NFL. But beyond that, there's no bigger job. And Blagojevich is done. He's toast.
Mm-hmm.
He'll never have another job in politics.
But he seems to be such a sleazy individual.
Yes, he is. And clearly he thinks everything's for sale. And with Obama, he only thinks some things are for sale.
I think he's a man of integrity. What do you think he thinks is for sale?
Oh, I'm just joking, really. Well, I think he thinks groceries are for sale. But anyway, puppies. Get this. There's a nice description. What did you say?
Puppies.
Puppies, absolutely. Puppies are for sale, and he needs to buy one.
That's right.
So there was an interesting description in the paper that I thought was worth reading. It talks about how the two of them never warmed to each other, even though they hung out, you know, in Illinois together. Mm-hmm. But that they were clearly rivals, you know, and they could use each other to enhance their own career, because one's a senator, one's the governor. You're going to have times when you can help each other. Mm-hmm. But Blagojevich apparently considered Obama naive mm-hmm. and pretentious, and he dismissed Obama's success as lucky, that he was, you know, it was good luck. He was mm-hmm. lucky. Mm-hmm. And Obama disparaged Blagojevich for his combativeness, for his disorganization, mm-hmm. and his habit of arriving at official events half an hour late. Hmm. So he's not a guy who's on time. Mm-hmm. Of course, Bill Clinton was that way, too. Right. Usually with Clinton, he held over the previous meeting to talk more with people, mm-hmm. and that he was late. Late for the next meeting. Yeah, I guess so. And so that's one thing you got to say about George W. Bush.
Punctual. On time.
He made the meetings run on time, so I think what they say about him. Mm. But I just thought it was interesting that mm-hmm. Blagojevich thought, oh, that Obama, he's just lucky. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he attributed his own skill, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. This all comes back to attribution theory. Attribution theory is really interesting, and the research on all this has been pretty interesting over the years. But what they've discovered, the self-serving bias is one of the things that comes out of attribution theory. Attribution theory essentially says, what do you attribute, you know, events to? And what happens is that if it's your own event, something that happens to you, if it's positive, we attribute it to our skills mm-hmm. and our wisdom and our talents. And if it's something negative, we have this what's known as the self-serving bias, and we have reasons why we aren't responsible for the negative outcome. So you go to get a job, and you go to the job interview, and you tell your friends, hey, I'm really looking forward to this. I think I'd love this job. I think I'm going to get it. I had a good interview. Mm-hmm. And then you don't get it. Someone else gets it. And they say, well, you know, what happened was they weren't looking for somebody with my talents. They don't want somebody. They want somebody they can pay less, so they hired this young person. Or they want somebody a little older. We have all these reasons why it happened.
But that's dynamic optimism. Have you read about that? I mean, that's actually a way of functioning that is very positive. That if you're like that, you could be a more successful human being.
Well, it strikes me. Go ahead.
If you think, well, I mean, it was not my fault. It was just bad luck. You know, I'll just keep going. I'll keep trying.
Well, no, and it's good to be optimistic, but maybe that's what people need to make it work, because otherwise we have trouble dealing with our failures. Mm-hmm. But clearly this is a kind of not taking responsibility when you make excuses, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, why not if you can tell yourself that you can be positive about it, not just dynamic optimism, not just sort of empty optimism, but it's a way of going forward, I think. It's not making excuses, it's just forget about it, you know, moving forward.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, so there's the self-serving bias, and mm-hmm. most of us have it. That is that we are willing to excuse our behavior, and there are rationalizations for it. Uh-huh. But with other people, if someone else, if one of your friends says, oh, I'm hoping for this job, and then they don't get it, mm-hmm. what we usually say is, well, you know, you didn't get it. And the friend makes up an excuse and says, well, you know, they wanted somebody younger. What we tend to say to ourselves and not to our friend is, well, you know, they just found somebody who was a better match. It wasn't for you. You mm-hmm. should face it. But we never say that to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just life, and that's the way it is. It's all very psychological, you know? Well, let's see. Do we need to wrap up with anything else? Well, I think it's this beauty contest in Baghdad.
Oh, yes.
You heard about
that.
This, Robin,
uh-huh,
didn't you?
Yeah.
So this was in the newspaper just today. It's hot off the presses.
Mm-hmm.
And Baghdad had its first public beauty pageant. since 2003. And a 17-year-old won it. But they've got a picture of this group of women and a motley crew it is. Let's see. Five are in skirts and five are in pants.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are in jeans.
Mm-hmm. The one in jeans and the heels in the middle, one. She's the prettiest.
Is that the criteria, pretty?
Well,
what about the talent competition?
I don't know what they did.
Well, can any of them use an AK-47? I mean, there is a war on, you know.
And wearing bathing suits, I don't think so.
No, see, I don't think there was a swimsuit competition.
No.
At least they didn't show pictures of it here. And
no.
If there is, they always show you a picture from the swimsuit competition.
Right, of course.
It's like those page three girls in England or those underwear ads on page three in the Washington Post.
Right, uh-huh.
They're always there.
Yeah.
So
I don't know why.
Now, in Iraq, they're going to be a little more demure.
Yes, of course.
So perhaps they could, you know, use... Well, they must have swimsuits in Iraq.
Now, there is something shocking about this, and that was they took off their scarves for the beauty contest. After they left, they had to put on their scarves to leave. So that was sort of the equivalent of the beauty bathing suit.
Yeah, interesting.
Portion.
Well, the one issue we did not get to tonight is the auto bailout, and. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but I think I'll wrap up with this. It failed over the weekend, and conservative Republicans have suddenly found their spine, and they've suddenly decided that we're spending too much money. Now, they let Bush spend $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there, but suddenly a few billion to keep the automakers afloat is too much. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because one school of thought says what Republicans are doing is shooting themselves further in the foot. Basically, you know, Reagan Democrats are labor guys. Reagan Democrats are workers, not all union necessarily. But what the conservative Republicans are saying here is that, you know, you got to let these companies fail. And, of course, there's a huge section of the economy that's dependent on this. And so if we can bail out the financial sector to the tune of $700 billion, it seems like $25 billion mm-hmm. for auto shouldn't be too much. And we don't know that $25 billion would be enough, but these Republicans don't really want to go down in history as the people that refuse to bail out the auto industry, especially if it leads to bigger problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we aren't. They claim we're not that far from depression.
Mm-hmm.
And just the thought of it depresses me.
Yeah, me too. Once I built a real good car, made it run, made it race
like
against
this.
Time. Once I built a good car, now it's done. Buddy, can you spare a dime? Oh, $25 billion.
Yeah, a dime won't do it anymore. But that song, I guess that was out during the Depression, of
yeah.
course.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, that's going to do it for another edition of The Andy Finn Show with Finn Man and Robin. We will be back next week, and next week will be our Christmas show, I suppose, because it's the last week before Christmas. So Santa might be here.
Angels,
but
we have heard.
Also, the angel will be back. Until next week, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.